I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's March 24th, and we have a lot to talk about. And as we all continue to adjust and adapt to the new normal, I'm going to continue to share information about COVID-19 that people affected by MS need to know. So the first thing I want to tell you about is a series of weekly webinars that I've started hosting for the National MS Society. The webinar series is called Ask an MS Expert, and this series is all about connecting you with MS experts so that you're getting reliable information that you can trust, and you're getting answers to the questions that you have in mind. These webinars are fully interactive sessions, so you'll be able to ask MS experts your questions. So please remember, it's a weekly webinar series. There's going to be a new webinar this week and in the weeks to come. Check your email, or you can always check the National MS Society website for more information. So this new webinar series kicked off last Friday, and the first two MS experts to join me were Kathy Costello and Dr. Aaron Miller. Now, Kathy was a nurse practitioner and adjunct assistant professor at the Johns Hopkins MS Center in Baltimore, Maryland. Today, she's the vice president of healthcare access for the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, where she leads the society's strategic initiative on access to quality healthcare. Dr. Aaron Miller is the chair of the Society's National Medical Advisory Committee and is also the medical director of the Corrine Goldsmith Dickinson Center for Multiple Sclerosis and a professor of neurology at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai. He also serves as vice chair for education in the Department of Neurology. Dr. Miller was the first chairman of the Multiple Sclerosis Section of the American Academy of Neurology, and he's participated in numerous clinical trials of new MS treatments. During the webinar, both Kathy and Dr. Miller answered dozens of questions covering how to best manage stress and anxiety, whether you should make any changes to your disease-modifying therapy, whether COVID-19 can cause an MS relapse, if you can safely take steroids if you experience a relapse, and lots more. The good news is that the MS Society recorded the webinar, and if you missed it, you'll find a link to the recording in today's show notes. The rest of the good news is that Dr. Miller will be joining me in a few minutes as my guest on the podcast, so you'll have an opportunity to hear more information that I know you can use about MS and COVID-19. But before we get to my conversation with Dr. Miller, there are a few other things that you should know about. And this is a good time for me to mention that although this episode of Real Talk MS is going to be released on Tuesday, March 24th, I'm actually recording this episode on Sunday, March 22nd. And because our current situation is continually evolving, you may hear me talk about something that's already been changed or updated with new information. All I can do is assure you that everything you're going to hear in today's podcast is the most current information as of this moment. But I wouldn't be at all surprised if some of it changed in the next 15 minutes. We're all learning about COVID-19 in real time. It seems like every day scientists learn a little bit more about this virus, which means that we're all regularly checking our favorite online sources for the latest information about the COVID-19 pandemic. Last week, I mentioned the importance of checking reliable online sources so that you're getting credible information. And I want to say that again this week because I'm watching the amount of questionable information about COVID-19 multiply at an alarming rate. Some of the information that I've come across is incomplete because it's missing important details. And some of the information that I've seen online is just wrong. And that includes so many of the social media posts that begin with, "My friend who is a neurologist," or "My friend who works in an emergency room in Italy or Spain or Poland or somewhere." Well, my friend says, so please, be sure that you're checking sources that you can trust. I hope that you'll include listening to Real Talk MS as one of those sources. And I want to make sure that you're including the National MS Society's website as a reliable source for information about COVID-19 and what people affected by MS need to know during the pandemic. They've set up a page that's just full of important information about disease-modifying therapy treatment guidelines, how and why COVID-19 may cause a worsening of your MS symptoms, how COVID-19 spreads, how to protect yourself from the spread of this virus, the unsubstantiated claims about ibuprofen and COVID-19, and a lot more. Just point your browser at nationalmssociety.org/COVID-19, and I'll include that link in today's show notes. Last week, the president signed the Families First Coronavirus Response Act into law. This is just the first piece of legislation that we'll see that's been designed to provide relief to families throughout the United States during the coronavirus pandemic. Hopefully, further relief legislation will be passed and signed into law by the time you're listening to this. But this law provides paid sick days and emergency leave for some employees who become infected or have to stay home to take care of others who have contracted COVID-19. The law expands the number of people who are eligible for no-cost coronavirus testing. It increases federal support of Medicaid spending to help ease the financial strain on state budgets. It provides more opportunities for paid time off from work, and it suspends the work requirements for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, otherwise known as SNAP. There's more legislation in the works and still more to be considered. Now, some of the issues that MS activists would like to see addressed include ensuring that patients have access to COVID-19 treatment at no or low out-of-pocket costs, expanding the number of workers eligible for paid and protected leave, expanding Medicaid enrollment, initiating a special open enrollment period for health insurance coverage under the Affordable Care Act, and requiring all insurers to allow patients to follow the CDC recommendations and obtain backup supplies of essential prescription medicines and medical products. Like much in our world today, all of these legislative issues are continually evolving, and I'll be doing my best to keep you updated on what's being discussed, what's been decided, and what it might mean for you and your family. A Canadian study shows that as women with MS age, they require fewer MS-related hospitalizations. A research team looked at hospitalization rates and factors that could predict the frequency of hospital admissions of MS patients in the Canadian province of Saskatchewan. Saskatchewan has one of the highest rates of hospital admissions in Canada, and there wasn't a single neurologist specializing in MS care in Saskatchewan until 2016. So the researchers looked at health data that was collected in Saskatchewan between 1996 and 2016. They identified 4,878 MS patients, who accounted for 11,744 hospitalizations, and they followed that group for an average of 11.7 years. They also identified a control group made up of 23,662 people who didn't have MS, but were gender and age matched to the MS patient group. And they followed this healthy control group for 11.5 years. Using mathematical models, the research team analyzed the rate and reason for each individual hospitalization in the two subject groups. And they looked at whether things like sex, age, household income, prior hospitalizations, and the status of other illnesses or comorbidities, whether any of these could predict future hospitalizations. And the results showed that MS patients had a higher rate of hospital admissions and longer hospital stays than the general population, although these numbers decreased over time. A higher comorbidity rate, that is, a greater number of other health conditions, older age, and prior hospitalizations were all associated with an increased rate of hospitalization for both groups, but the researchers found that MS-related hospitalizations decreased with age, and predictive associations with prior hospitalizations or comorbidities also decreased with age. And while gender didn't play a part in hospitalizations among the general population, it did play a part among MS patients, with male patients being more likely than female patients to be admitted to the hospital for both MS-related reasons and non-MS-related reasons. As the subjects in both patient groups aged, the gap in the frequency of hospitalizations between MS patients and the general population narrowed. Researchers theorized that this was probably due to an age-related decrease in MS disease activity and a natural increase in illness among the general population as it ages. Now, if you'd like to review the details of this study, I'll include a link in today's show notes. Balance is something that we want to strive for in all areas of life. But balance is critical when it comes to walking. And it's especially important among people living with MS, because it's estimated that 56% of the people living with MS fall at least once every 3 months, and 37% fall two or more times every 3 months. And unfortunately, the seriousness of a fall is really never known until it's too late. And frankly, that mostly relies on luck. So understanding who is at risk to suffer a fall is important. And a research team from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and North Carolina State University has published a small study that identifies a new tool that may provide doctors with an easier and more reliable way to diagnose MS patients who may have balance issues before the patients themselves realize that they may have balance issues. The team recruited a group of 14 people with relapsing remitting MS and a control group of 14 healthy volunteers. And they gave each study participant a test that used virtual reality to simulate the act of walking down a hallway while the participant was actually walking on a treadmill. In this simulation, the researchers created the illusion of side-to-side wobbles to make the participant feel like they were falling. And then they used 3D motion capture cameras to record gait variability, differences in their overall motion, and of course, their balance. They discovered that during normal walking without any virtual reality, both groups of participants seemed to be about the same. However, once the simulated falling was applied, there was a significant difference in how the group of MS patients responded, and these differences were noted in every area that was being measured. And remember, none of these differences were observed when the MS patients walked normally without that simulated falling being applied. So as we see this research expanded, it suggests an opportunity for using virtual reality to identify balance problems that usually go undetected until someone actually starts falling around the house or at work. And that kind of proactive diagnosis can spare people from potential injury and provide them with a better quality of life. You could almost say a more balanced life. If you'd like to review the details of this study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. A couple of weeks ago, I told you that the pharmaceutical company Janssen, a division of Johnson & Johnson, had submitted an application to the European Medicines Agency seeking approval for ponesimod, an oral treatment for relapsing remitting MS. Now I can also share that Janssen has submitted a similar application to the FDA for approval of ponesimod in the United States. Ponesimod works by limiting the damage to the nervous system that immune cells can cause in MS in the same way that Gilenya and Mayzent work. Ponesimod was compared to Aubagio in a phase 3 clinical trial involving more than 1,100 people with relapsing remitting MS or active secondary progressive MS, and the results of that trial showed that, compared to Aubagio, ponesimod significantly reduced annual relapse rate, significantly reduced the number of new active inflammatory brain lesions, and reduced reported MS fatigue. Last week, I had the pleasure of hosting episode 1 of the National MS Society's Ask an MS Expert webinar series. One of the experts on that webinar was Dr. Aaron Miller, the chair of the MS Society's National Medical Advisory Committee, the medical director of the Corrine Goldsmith Dickinson Center for Multiple Sclerosis, and a professor of neurology at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai. Dr. Miller shared some excellent insights and advice about several issues related to COVID-19 and MS. And after the webinar, I invited Dr. Miller to continue the conversation with me on today's podcast. In a moment, we'll meet my guest, Dr. Aaron Miller. Dr. Aaron Miller is the chair of the National MS Society's National Medical Advisory Committee and is also the medical director of the Corrine Goldsmith Dickinson Center for Multiple Sclerosis and a professor of neurology at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai. He also serves as vice chair for education in the Department of Neurology. Dr. Miller was the first chairman of the multiple sclerosis section of the American Academy of Neurology, and he's participated in numerous clinical trials of new treatments for multiple sclerosis. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Miller.
Thanks, John. I'm happy to be here in these very trying times.
Well, already we've seen recommendations about disease-modifying therapies and COVID-19 coming from multiple individuals, groups, and organizations. And while everyone has attempted to provide clarity and sound guidance, differences in these recommendations have created a significant amount of confusion. What does someone need to know when it comes to making decisions about their disease-modifying therapy in light of COVID-19?
Well, John, I think the reason that there are confusing messages is because, sadly, we lack any definitive data. We have no scientific information really to guide us for sure. So we have the wisdom of a lot of experts in the field of MS, leavened by what we understand from virologists and infectious disease experts. So there's naturally going to be some difference of opinion as we await greater clarity. And the situation is fluid, so it could be that at any time we learn something new. I think as a general rule, almost all patients should be staying on their disease-modifying therapy. They're on those treatments in order to protect them from the potential for serious neurological disability, which could result from the recrudescence or the recurrence of their MS activity, which might happen if they are not protected by the particular disease-modifying therapy. So in very few instances, I think, should people be coming off their medication.
I'm curious, should someone hold off on starting a new disease-modifying therapy until after the current climate regarding COVID-19 is a little more settled?
So that's a very good question, John. Now, and again, I think a patient newly considering going on a disease-modifying therapy should have a conversation with his or her healthcare provider. Every patient with MS is unique, and there might be circumstances where it might be wise for an individual with MS to either defer initiation of therapy, perhaps if it's an extremely mild appearing case at that particular time, or to consider starting that first therapy with one of the injectable drugs, one of the interferons, Avonex, Betaseron, Rebif, Xtavia, Plegridy, or with Copaxone or one of its generic alternatives, Glatiram or Acetate. Those drugs are regarded as very safe. And in fact, interferons got their name because they interfere with viral replication, so they might even potentially be helpful. Now, I know those drugs have been relatively infrequently used as first-line therapy in modern days because people are understandably reluctant to take injections. Plus, we've gotten some newer medications, which on average are more highly effective than those drugs. Nonetheless, in this current circumstance, if a person has a relatively mild disease, they might want to start on one of those medicines. Tysabri is a very highly effective therapy, which we also regard as safe with regard to coronavirus. Of course, people who test positive for antibodies to the JC virus, which can cause a serious brain infection called PML, should probably not be starting that medication. But if they're JC virus antibody negative, that's another alternative.
If someone is diagnosed with COVID-19, should they be worried about it potentially triggering an MS relapse?
Well, our conventional teaching over many, many years is that there is some evidence that viral infection has the potential to trigger an MS relapse. And I would say that probably is going to hold true as well for the virus that causes COVID-19 disease. However, the bottom line is even most patients who contract the viral infection probably will not have relapses. And this is just one of many, many reasons why everybody should be taking all of the precautions recommended by the CDC to try to avoid contracting the viral infection. And if one lives in a geographic area where there are even more restrictive recommendations, one should follow those recommendations that are made by the local officials and health authorities.
Well, COVID-19 notwithstanding, if someone does get an MS relapse during this period, is it safe for them to take steroids?
Yes, we believe it is safe for them to take steroids. I want to remind people that steroids don't help you recover better from a relapse. They simply help you recover faster. So if a person has a very mild relapse, they may want to avoid steroids in this particular time. But nonetheless, we don't have any evidence that that the use of steroids increases your likelihood of getting COVID-19 infection. And in fact, if you are infected, those people who have the most severe form, which causes a serious pneumonia and what's called acute respiratory distress syndrome, those patients are often treated with steroids to try to reduce the inflammation.
Should someone think about using vitamins or supplements to boost their immune system if they're living with MS right now?
So in general, we tend to tell people with MS, don't take supplements or vitamins that are touted to boost the immune system, because there's at least the theoretical potential that maybe that could increase the risk for their MS acting up. We don't really have any definitive data about that, nor is there very good scientific evidence that any of these vitamins or supplements is really immunologically protective or beneficial.
What about the other prescription medications that people might be taking to manage other MS symptoms? Do any of those medications increase the risk of contracting COVID-19 or making it worse if someone with MS does contract the virus?
The good news, if there is any during the midst of this pandemic, is that we're not aware of any medications that MS patients take for managing their symptoms that would increase their likelihood of either getting COVID-19 or having a worse disease course.
And if a vaccine for COVID-19 is developed, can people with MS receive it?
Almost certainly they will be able to receive it. It's extremely likely that any vaccine that's developed would probably not be a live virus vaccine. For example, flu vaccine is not a live virus vaccine, and it's perfectly safe and recommended to be taken by people with MS.
Well, Dr. Miller, thank you for providing information that we can rely on. Thank you for all you do on behalf of people who are affected by MS, and thanks for talking with me today.
Well, thank you, John, for making this valuable service available to people with MS. We all need to remember to stick together and be supportive to one another at this time.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And as we make our way through the days and weeks ahead, I hope you'll share this podcast with others who might also gain some benefit from listening. You can share this episode of Real Talk MS by letting people know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com realtalkms.com/134. That's realtalkms.com/134. And you'll find that link in today's show notes so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or text. And I hope you'll take just a minute to visit realtalkms.com/walkms and make a donation toward Walk MS today. Having already invested over $1 billion in MS research, the National MS Society is the largest private funder of MS research in the world, and I'd like to see that level of investment continue and even increase. So I hope you'll step up and, as you're able, play an active role in furthering the Society's work by making a contribution today. This year, I'm walking to honor the memory of my wife, Jean, who lived for 23 years with progressive MS, and I'm inviting you to help. Just visit realtalkms.com/walkms to make your donation, and you'll find that link in today's show notes. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.